Hey everybody, come on in, come on in. I hope you guys are doing well. I hope you're having a great day. It's so good to see you. Welcome, welcome, welcome to Money in the Morning. I'm looking purple on the screen because I don't know how good my Wi-Fi is. I'm out of town today and my lighting's not perfect. So actually in a second, I may actually end up turning off the video in order to save the Wi-Fi space. But anyway, I hope everybody's doing good. How are you? Today I wanted to dig into a couple of things, and I'm not going to keep you long today because we're doing the portfolio power play right after this at 11. Yes, 10. Yeah, we'll be starting that at 11, and I'm going to go through what's happening in the stock market. The stock market's been having some a lot of ups and downs lately, a lot of dips, and so dips are opportunities, but also dips have to be something responded to. And if you remember when we did our what was it? Stormproof investing training. I talked to you specifically about the fact that I expected a dip to come, and it came sooner than I thought. I thought it might come like the summertime, but it came sooner than I expected, and it could be the beginning of even more. So I want to kind of talk about some of the risks that are out there, so we just kind of know what's going on. All right, so give me one second here. Actually, today, you know what was on my mind today was actually corporate slavery and how that kind of works. And I thought that maybe I'd go to my section, the section of my book on corporate slavery and kind of how that affects so many of us. And actually, though, before I even start, though, I should definitely say hi to you. And I see Oliver, Claudia, Errol Semengal, Patricia, Felicia, Rhonda, Zoe, who else is in here? Let's see here. Mark Burge, Terrell Griffin, Jonathan, Nikisha. I see Nikisha, Alicia, Nisha, Kendrick, Jackie, Leona, Katrina. There's so many of you that come in here. It's hard to keep up with all the names, but I love it though. I'm so happy that I appreciate all of you so much because, as you know, Black economics isn't always the most popular topic in the world, but I think it should be because a lot of us complain about financial problems and we always talk about money and money this and money that, and I want to get money and I don't have enough money. And it's kind of like, well, if you want to fix that, you got to fix it. You can't just complain about it. Complaining about a problem does not fix the problem. Whining about an issue does not make the issue better. You have to prepare. And so, anyways, speaking of preparation, I'm preparing right now for the Stock Options Summit, which is going to happen in Los Angeles on the 19th and the 20th. So, if you still want to fly in, it's not too late. You can go to stockoptionssummit.com. I think there's like four tickets left or something. So don't show up at the door because there won't be any tickets at the door. That I can tell you. But if you want to come out, well, then feel free to go to stockoptionssummit.com, and I would love to see you there. And it's going to be a whole weekend of stock options. We're going to basically go through all kinds of strategies, all kinds of approaches to making money. When you walk out of there, you'll make more money, especially if you have a little bit of a capital base. When you walk out of there, it's very easy for me to show you exactly how you can make more money. And if you don't have any money, if you don't have any capital base at all, we can get you started in that direction. If you get a capital base, that's what makes you successful. Okay, Veronica is going. We're going to meet today in the group consultation. Good, 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 excellent. I look forward to seeing you later on today, Veronica. All right. So let me kind of hop into what was on my mind today. I woke up in my parents' house and I was thinking about because we're actually doing some estate planning for our family, actually, and that's why. That's why I'm here, and then I got to hop on the plane to LA in a couple of days, and so I started thinking about corporate slavery in America, and the interesting thing about corporate slavery is that this is a persistent problem for a lot of people. It's not just Black people; it's lots of non-Black people too. And sort of being stuck on the corporate plantation in a place where you don't have the opportunities you deserve, in a place where you're stressed out, beyond belief, and in a place where you don't feel like you have any options. I think this is one of the greatest economic challenges that exists in our society. So, in my view, when you see this as let's say it's an economic illness, and I'm the financial doctor, and the doctor sees the patient, and they see the illness, and they see the symptoms. They're going to want to dig to the root of what caused the illness. At least that's what I want to do. I don't want to just deal with the symptoms and deal with the outcome. I want to deal with the root. I want to figure out like what's going on here. How did this happen? And I'll say this: I remember when I was 17. And most of us at 17, we don't listen to our parents. I don't know if any of y'all were the same way, but I didn't. And I remember one thing my father said to me that was really interesting, that really got my attention, that got me to kind of listen and wake up a little bit, was he said, if you keep messing around with your life, one day you're going to wake up and you're going to be 35 years old and you won't know what you did with all your time. And I remember thinking about that, and I don't know, for some reason that really stuck with me. That idea that one day I could wake up at a point in my life where I couldn't go back and fix it, I couldn't go back and change very much, and I would have all these regrets. And for whatever reason, that really stuck with me, that resonated with me, and it got me to thinking about how I was going to make my next move. And it motivated me a little bit. And it's and as I sort of went through life and I saw how other people had their life experience, I saw a lot of that. I saw a lot of regret. And I saw a lot of psychological symptoms that tend to arise out of that regret, like a lot of depression, a lot of anxiety. In our Black financial therapy department, we have a whole list of mental health problems that emerge for mostly Black people, because we are stuck in this horrible economic situations. And a lot of it starts with what you do at work, because a lot of us spend more time at work than we do anywhere else. We spend more time with our boss than we spend with our kids, more time with our boss than we spend with our spouse, more time with our boss than we spend doing things that we enjoy. So if you think about it, it seems like a key to misery would be to be stuck doing something, spending your life doing something that doesn't mean a whole lot to you and doesn't make you feel good. You're literally dipping yourself in poison and you're swimming in poison. And I don't know how anybody can expect to be healthy when you're swimming in poison, low vibrational, stressful situations. That does kill you. That leads to things like the cortisol release in your body with fight or flight sorts of feelings. And if you spend your whole life in that fight or flight mode, it actually causes you to die earlier. I don't know if y'all know that or not, but literally, you die you die earlier if you are if you're constantly under that kind of stress and under that kind of pressure. So let me share with you a little bit in terms of what I wrote about in my book. My book is, it's The 10 Commandments of Black Economic Power. You can get a copy at drboycebooks.com. And I want to jump into this one particular slide. I've done a dissection in terms of figuring out how we end up becoming economic slaves, how we get stuck with this corporate nonsense or whatever, and find ourselves working really hard and getting very few rewards. And so some of you have seen some of this, but I want to recap it really quick so that we can really dissect it and really talk about strategies, especially strategies that can be taught to kids and stuff like that. So the first thing is the public school system is, in my view, mostly terrible. Not 100% terrible, but pretty bad in the sense that most of the conversation in the public school is all about chasing the job. And even most politicians, when they talk about economic problems in the Black community, the most they'll talk about is more jobs, more jobs, more jobs. And when I hear more jobs, I'm literally hearing, basically, in my mind, they're saying you'll get more opportunities to serve white people. Also, when I hear more jobs, what I'm hearing is instant gratification of a paycheck in exchange for long-term benefits of actual true wealth. So the job, for the most part, when they use that acronym just over broke, that pretty much applies in the sense that if you talk about wealth and a wealth mindset must be one that is long-term and one that is into delayed gratification. So if you are thinking short-term, like if you're thinking, how am I going to get paid Friday? And you're thinking about instant gratification, how am I going to get my money right now? Well, then you're going to be missing out on a lot of wealth. You don't have the wealth vision. You don't have the economic vision that's going to get you where you want to get to. So this is why in our society, you have so many of us that end up working extremely hard every single day. And it seems like they're not getting anywhere. Like they're just, on a treadmill. Well, that's why. That's a big part of the reason why, is because that whole system, it's not designed for you to really build wealth. Wealth, I understand wealth. I understand who has the wealth in this society. And I talked to you guys the other day, for example, about the flood of people that they've let into the country with no documentation. Well, that's actually, and what's interesting is that I would hear politicians say, no, the immigration's great because it's boosting the economy, it's boosting the economy. And I said, well, I was thinking, well, how is it boosting the economy? Oh, I know why, because it's boosting the labor supply. And that is good for the economy. If you are a corporation, you now have more workers you can pick from that are going to help you make more money. So that does boost the economy. But then I want you to ask yourself this really important question. If it's really boosting the economy and everybody's benefiting so much, why is it that when you ask most regular people if the economy is getting better or worse, they're not going to say that it's getting better? Has anybody ever thought about that? Let me ask y'all this question. When you look at the economy and you look at where, in inflation and job availability and home prices and wealth creation, give me a yes or no. Do you feel like this is a great economy for everybody? How do you feel? I mean, do you feel like the economy is just amazing and wonderful and booming, or do you feel like there's some problems? What do you think? Give me your assessment on that. Right. A lot of workers feel that the economy absolutely sucks. So how is it that the economists are all saying that the economy is booming, but millions of workers are saying, no, it's not booming. This sucks. I can't afford groceries anymore. I can't afford to buy a house. Millennials are all sad, depressed. They're on TikTok in tears because they can't afford to pay the bills. How does that work? How is it that you're telling me that this, and think about it, if they're in tears during a booming economy, what do you think life's going to be like for them in a recession? Seriously. If they are in tears and the economy's booming, then what the hell's the recession going to be like? It's crazy. Well, the reason they're in tears is because basically the club is popping, right? It basically it's like if you think about economics like a club, and the club is popping, there's liquor flowing, there's loud music, everybody's having a ball. They're locked outside the club. So the club, it be the cl if the club is alive and everybody's having fun, and you're not in the club, and you're sitting outside in 2 degree weather, wearing a mini skirt or something because you're trying to look cute, or you out there freezing to death trying to figure out if you can get the bouncer to take your $50. You're not having fun. Everybody's not having the same amount of fun when it comes to the club. The people in the club in the VIP section are having a great time. They love being in the club. You don't, because you're outside. The millennials are the Gen Zs, they're outside. Workers are outside. Workers are maybe the workers are like the bouncers at the club, or maybe they're the waiters at the club. But they're not in the VIP section. They're not out having fun. So even the workers in the club are not having as much fun as the people in the VIP section. So, well, who's in the VIP section? It's the investors. It's the people that own assets. It's the people. I'm not gonna pretend. I'm not gonna lie to you. I've been in the VIP section for a while now. It's nice in there. The drinks are good. The service is wonderful. That's how economics works in America. And so if you don't position yourself in the club in the right way, you ain't gonna have no fun. If you let them trick you into either standing outside in the cold trying to get in like the Gen Zs, or you let them trick you into being a waitress at the club or a stripper at the club. Not that I would go to a club with strippers, but let's just keep the analogy flowing because I think it works. If they trick you into one of those roles, you're not going to have as much fun as the people who get to be customers at the club or those who get to sit in the VIP section. So what I really want you to understand is the difference between being in the VIP section and being a waitress. I want you to know the difference between being a customer and being frozen outside, in a mini skirt, freezing to death, trying to get inside. So let's dig further into this because I think this is important to really understand. So when you're talking about the way we're tricked into corporate slavery, first off, the public school system was built primarily. I heard a theory that said that the Rockefellers and people like that contributed heavily to the public school system for a couple of reasons. One, they needed people to babysit your kids so you could come to work because they needed more workers. That's why they would support things like feminism and all that. If feminism meant, if feminism meant convincing women that they are better off going to work every day, then they were all for it. Now, again, I'm into freedom. I believe everybody should be free to do whatever they want. But I know some really smart women who say, I really don't want to be in a factory all day. I'd rather be with my kids. That to me makes more sense. That I would call that more so womanism, which means as a woman, you're free to make the choices you want. But I think that when you get to the point where people make fun of a woman because she doesn't want to work, because she wants to, say, be a mom or something like that, which is to me a more important job for society, I think that that's over the line. I had a conversation with my daughter about that. And she said, yeah, some of my friends make fun of me because I'm just a mom. And I said, what do you mean just a mom? I said, don't you ever say you're just a mom. I said, do you understand that being a mom is the most important job on the planet? If moms stopped doing their jobs, we would all be dead. We would have a nation full of serial killers. And we're kind of getting a lot more school shooters because they ain't spending enough time with their mama. No kid who got consistent love from their mama ever grew up and shot up the school. I don't believe any kid has ever who really got to spend a lot of quality time with mama when they were little, grew up and said, I'm just gonna kill everybody today. Okay. So mothers are important, right? So here's the deal. I believe that theory when I read that the Rockefellers poured money into the school system so that people would have someone to babysit their kids so they can come to work. I believe that. I also believe the other theory about the Rockefellers and others pouring money into the school system to be based on the idea that they need people that are trained to be workers. They wanted to train America similar to how they trained black people during slavery. If you remember, if you read Dr. Claude Anderson books, like Powernomics and Black Labor, White Wealth. And you guys know, we read those books every week. We do Powernomics training every Wednesday. It's totally free to the public. Just bring your family, bring everybody. You ain't got to pay money. Just pay attention and bring your family. Text the word greatness to 87948. If you text greatness to 87948, I'll send you an invitation. It's amazing, right? So we've been going through Dr. Claude Anderson books. And one thing that he documents very well in his book, Black Labor, White Wealth, is that there was a specific and deliberate, very economically conscious, there's that term, economic consciousness. Remember, this is economic consciousness training, financial consciousness training. They made a financially conscious decision to train black people to be a very loyal, subservient workforce that was not going to be competitive with white men. That's it. As long as you don't compete with white people, as long as you know your place, as long as you stay in your lane, as long as you don't get too uppity, then we would love to have you here. We want you here because we need backup. We need support. We need somebody to do all the work. And then, of course, we're going to take all the credit and we're going to get all the money, but we need you to take pride in doing all the work. We want you to take pride in how much you help us. We want you to take pride in how much you do for us, right? So to me, when they design the public school systems, it's kind of the same way. There are lots of people that give their lives to corporations. They will give their lives. They will go work at Walmart and they'll wear the Walmart badge with honor. They'll take pride in their position. Like I'm now a regional manager and of seven, I got seven Walmart stores that I control and all that. And I get that. I respect that. But the problem is that those aren't really your stores. You're really kind of a babysitter. That's what you are. You're like a babysitter that says, look, I'm in charge of seven kids, and that's fine, but you're not a parent, though. Being a babysitter is not the same as a parent. So in general, the school system, and it's not just done to black people, they just really do it to black people. You're trained to be an economic babysitter. And an economic babysitter is ba a babysitter is basically a person who does all the work of the parent, but gets none of the benefits of the parent. They don't get the long-term benefits. The long-term benefit is when you're older, your kids are going to show up and take care of you in the nursing home, or if your kids get wealthy, they're going to make sure you're good. Or when you die, your legacy is going to live on through your children. Babysitters don't get any of that. Babysitters just get compensated to fill a void, to do some of the work that the parent can or cannot or does not want to do. So to some extent, a lot of these jobs that we're trained to chase put you in a position of being an economic babysitter. It is a s scenario where you don't have real power. You don't have real power, but you have the perception of power. You don't have power, but you are very close to power. So sometimes being close to power or having the perception of power can make you think you actually have power. It's like if I turn on this lamp is going to light up. This lamp next to me, you can't see it, but if I turn this lamp on, it's going to light up. And so someone who does not understand electricity can look at this lamp and think that this lamp actually has power, that this lamp actually is a light source. And that's what a little child might say because they don't understand how electricity works. But a smart person like you and I would look at the lamp and know that this lamp has no power. This lamp only appears to have power because this lamp is plugged into the wall. This lamp is connected to a power source. So the lamp does not have any power. The lamp just transmits power from a power source. So my point, my belief, my firm belief is that if you're talking about Black economics, we have to stop being the transmitters of power or the representatives of power or having the symbolic power and actually become the power source. Becoming the power source requires a lot more work. You know, becoming really having the connect and really being the man and really being the leader requires a level of commitment that a lot of people don't understand in a world that is built on instant gratification. When you're talking about things like building businesses or developing infrastructure or doing the grown-up long-term work of building institutions, that's not really something that gets talked about a lot. It's not something that's sexy and cool. It's not flashy. You know, it's not something where you're like Diddy and you're dancing around at 24 years old with all this power that Clive Davis gave you because he only had you do God knows what in the back office, right? That's not the fun part. That's not real power. That's the perception of power, right? That's the Wizard of Oz kind of power. But real power is something that has to be developed over time. It's something where someone has to make the sacrifice over a period of time to develop that institution, like the NFL. NFL owners have real power. Jerry Jones and all those old white guys, they have real power. You know why they have real power? They have real power because in the 1920s, somebody said, you know, let's create a football league. Let's create a league of our own. And someone else might have said, no, we can go and join the league that's over here. Somebody else already has a league. We could go be a part of what they're doing. They said, no, let's create a league of our own and let's make investments. And so they created these teams. They were figments of their imagination. They made up teams like the New York Giants and the Buffalo Bills. And they were like, okay, you can have the Chicago Bears for $200 and you can have the Buffalo Bills for $500 or whatever. And the New York Giants, or $150, whatever they were selling these franchises for, because nobody wanted them. And they took these franchises and they gave birth to them like newborn babies. They did the work of a parent, not the babysitter. And as a result, they spent many, many years, many, many tough years of trying to keep the league alive. I'm sure there was many stories where the league almost went bankrupt. There were times where they didn't know if it was going to succeed, and they stuck with it. They stuck with it because that was their seed. That was that when you give birth to something, you love that baby, whether the baby's pretty or ugly. If you give birth to a child, you love that baby, whether they're healthy or sick. You know, if that is your child, you love that child because that child is a part of you. So to some extent, when you're talking about building something, whatever it is, whether it's your family legacy, whether it's your family business or your capital base, you have to really pour into that thing. And you have to pour into it as much or more than you pour into anything else that somebody else has going on. You never, if you're trying to really be a parent, it is really difficult to be a full-time parent and a full-time babysitter at the same damn time. It's really hard. It's really hard to take good care of your kids and babysit massive kids at the same time. And this is the problem. This is why our children don't grow. Our economic children, meaning our institutions, the businesses, they don't grow because we're trying to juggle two worlds. We're trying to be a babysitter for him and a parent to what we have at the same time. And that does not work. In fact, Dr. Claude Anderson does an amazing job of explaining during slavery why so many of the slave children were not taken care of. He said that a lot of the parents in the Black community would get up at at 4 in the morning. And so they could get to Master's house early enough to get everything ready for the family. So they would make breakfast and have the hot, warm biscuits, you know, all co baked in, the food ready, and the fire going and all this other stuff. So that when the little white kids woke up, they would have a nice, warm kitchen to come into and a good breakfast to eat. And then they would spend the whole day with Master's kids from breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And then by about 6, 7, 8 o'clock at night, they would finally get to leave and go home. Now, the whole day, their own children were sitting back in the slave cabin with no supervision, no support, no nothing. Weren't getting fed the best food, weren't getting taken care of on any level. And so the slave kids didn't get the same care that the masses kids got. Well, the same thing is true for business. The same thing is true when you talk about economics. When you live your life, many of us, the majority of our time is spent getting up, getting dressed, going to work so we can babysit somebody else's institution, but we can monitor someone else's business. And we're not doing it to build a fortune. A lot of us are not even making enough money to even save or invest after we pay all of our bills. You're making just enough money to pay your bills. You're making just enough money to survive, but they don't want you to thrive because if you thrive, you might fly away. You might be free. They don't want you to be free. They need you to keep coming back. So the goal is to give you just enough money to help you pay bills so that you can never actually go. Not so much money that you can actually leave. So we spend all that time. We come on. Chris Rock was talking about his dad. He said, my dad used to leave for work at 8 in the morning and he would come back at 8:30 at night. And he said, my kid, he said, even if one of the kids had died, he wouldn't have known until 8:30 at night. And so he was making a joke about marriage. But if you think about that, think about how many families live that way. And think about how much time that is. That's literally 12, 13 hours a day that's spent. That's wealth. Time is wealth. Time is money. We've explained this, right? So you're giving all this time to someone else's business. You're monitoring their business, babysitting their institution, and pouring your God-given time into building wealth for somebody else. Well, how in the heck do you think you're gonna have anything for yourself when you get home? You're just not. You're not gonna have anything left. So ultimately, when you talk about the challenges of surviving economically, I like this graphic a lot because here's the deal. Look, things like starting businesses is really hard. It's hard to be an entrepreneur. It's very hard. It's not easy. And there's a good chance you're going to fail. I just want you to know that. If you have more skill, that you can reduce your chances of failure. If you work together with others, it reduces your chances of failure. But the reality is that a lot of not every entrepreneur succeeds. But the way I kind of look at it is whichever path you take, it's going to be hard. Being on the corporate plantation and the corporate treadmill is really, really hard. Having your boss stress you out and not making enough money to get ahead is very, very hard. Running a startup business is very, very hard. Being an entrepreneur is very, very hard. My question is not whether or not I'm going to choose the hard route because both options are hard. My question is, which version of hard is going to get me the best rewards in my life? That was my that that's the question. That was the question I asked myself when I was at Syracuse University. And I wasn't on the corporate plantation, but I was on the academic plantation because black scholars pretty much are hired just to pretty much be white scholars with black skin. We're hired to continue whatever tradition the university has. Diversity and equity and inclusion was never a real thing. And so I was on the academic plantation. Now, you'd be amazed how many super smart PhDs I know who literally don't even show their true intelligence because they're so scared of what white people are going to say. When I started to speak on pro-black issues, I lost a lot of friends that were black scholars. They stayed away from me because they knew that being around me was going to get them in trouble. And so I remember dealing with that. Now they won't, they would never admit it. Now they brag to their students that they know me, but I know the truth. I remember back in the day when you were scared to hang out with me because you knew I was ruffling feathers. I was making white people mad. So here was my simple logic. My simple logic was, I said, okay, I can keep playing this game with these people, these biased, racist jerks, and fit into their system, find some way to get them to accept me, which is going to be hard, or I can figure out how to strike out on my own, which is also going to be hard. Both options were brutally painful. They just were. Both options were going to require tremendous sacrifice. So the defining variable for me was I said, if I choose the hard option, which I'm going to choose because both options are hard, which hard option is going to give me the outcome that's going to make me happiest? Because I knew, I said, okay, so in universities, you pretty much have to play the game and kiss butts so you can get this thing called tenure. And all tenure is a lifetime job. It's like being married to a person who beats your ass every day, but they're never going to divorce you, right? To me, that's what it is. It's like lifetime access to an abusive relationship. Because I didn't really even like the people. I didn't fit in that well with white scholars, that, to be honest with you, because we were just different. I didn't dislike them. They didn't dislike me. It was just more they didn't understand me. I didn't understand them. And then the other side, I said, wait a minute. Okay, so what you're saying is that basically you're sacrificing your soul to get financial security. You're selling your soul just to have a lifetime job. Are you kidding me? That's like telling me if you climb Mount Everest, I'm gonna give you $100. Why the hell would I want to climb Mount Everest for $100? You better make me rich for the next 10,000 years. I'm not doing it for $100. That's how I felt. I remember thinking that I said, gosh, the reward isn't even that great. So, because what you're really just talking about is financial security. And remember, I told you all the secret to wealth, success, and everything else in America. It's not a good job. It's not a college degree. It's a capital base. Because if you have a capital base, you have financial security. What does that mean? That means that if I need something, I can get it. Do y'all follow me? It means if I'm hungry, I can eat. If I'm thirsty, I can drink. If the bills got to get paid, I can pay the bills when they're due. If I got that, I'm straight. I'm good. You can't tell me nothing. Like that song, Kanye had a song where he said, la, 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 wait till I get my money right. La, remember that? La, 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 can't nobody tell me nothing. Right? So really, if you get your money right, can't nobody really tell you nothing like that. Like you have a type of freedom that a lot of people only dream about. So I said, okay, I get it now. See, I went from solving academic problems to solving what I considered to be God's problem, or the problem God gave me. I stopped worrying about. I wrote a lot of research papers. I was really a dedicated scholar. I mean, there was a point in my life I wanted to win the Nobel Prize. I believed I could win it because I was smarter than most of my classmates and all that, and I was dedicated to that. But then I realized, I said, wait a minute. I'm putting all my energy into solving a certain problem, but I think I'm solving the wrong problem. I said, because if I can solve this problem over here, and the problem was very simple to me at the age of 34. The problem was, I got to figure out how to go make $1 million. Because if I make $1 million, I don't need these people to give me a job. And really, if you translate that to what we've discussed in this class, the problem was, I need to get a capital base. Because at that point in time, I need you to understand this. Follow me on this. My capital base was the university. The university was my capital base. That's what happens. We come out, it's like if you go out in the world and you ain't got no legs, somebody's got to give you some artificial legs. If you ain't got no ride, somebody's got to give you a ride, right? But if you own a car, then you don't need a ride. If you've got real legs, then you don't need artificial legs. So my artificial legs was the university. That they were giving me a ride. They were taking care of me. They gave me my capital base. Why? Because it's a big university. It's got a probably $2 billion, $3 billion endowment, maybe more. I have no idea. But they got billions of dollars in this big capital base, and they use that capital base to pay people to do work. So that was my capital base. And I said, I gotta get my own capital base. So that became my obsession. My obsession was, I got to figure out how to make $1 million so I could tell these people to kiss my whole entire ass. That was my thinking. That was literally my thinking. And I said, if you're so smart and you're supposed to have this whole PhD, you should be able to solve that problem. And I did. And once I did, it was an interesting experience because I realized how I'd been so psychologically trapped as a black man, because everything that I thought about in terms of how I saw the world and how I viewed myself was always through the lens of whiteness. I spent a lot of time in life worried about what white people thought, or being mad about what white people did, or thinking about what white people are going to do next. And once I was disconnected and liberated and genuinely comfortable with my situation, I wasn't even mad at them anymore. I saw this video once where this guy was explaining what happened when he died. He said that he was really scared when he was dying, and then he died. And you ever hear people talk about stories like that? He said, "Once I died, I just felt free. I felt so." He said, "I never felt that level of peace, that level of happiness. I didn't even care about anything that happened before I died. Like, and I was reviewing my life, and I was just, I can't explain just the love and the peace and the warmth. It sounded really good. It sounded like dying might be kind of cool. I hope it's that cool when it happens. I don't want to experience it too soon." But that's kind of what the way I would describe when you kind of climb out of the nonsense, when you climb out of the when you actually achieve some level of economic independence. You stop being mad at whatever racist white folks were doing to try to oppress you. I've never been mad at Syracuse. I've been honest about my experience because I think that there's a lot to learn from that. But I don't walk around like, oh man, they did me dirty, they did me wrong. Because if I was bitter, then that would mean maybe they had something that I want. They have nothing that I want. There's no job they could offer me that I would take. There's no job any university could have called for me that I would take because I found a better existence. I've literally elevated my consciousness to the point where I'm operating on a different vibrational plane now. I'm not even bitter. I'm not angry at all. I haven't been mad about it for about 10 years now. So what I would say to you, here's where I'm going with this. When you talk, let me put the slide back up again because I want to make sure we don't lose track of our slide. When you talk about how we're trained to be economic slaves, a lot of that starts in the school system. They get you focused on all the wrong things. The focal point should not be jobs in college and all that. It should start with a capital base. And really, you can help your kids by getting that started while they're young so they don't have to start over later. If I'd had somebody that knew the things back then in the 70s or 60s or whatever that I'm teaching you now, I would have had enough money where I would never would have had to fight that battle in the first place because I could literally have the freedom to do whatever I want. What else? Next, let me see here. Okay. Also media really pushes us to pursue material possessions. I think that the obsession with materialism is incredibly harmful from a financial standpoint. I think that I think it also leads to a lot of crime because people see rich people that have lots of stuff and they want to have the stuff too. And it kind of creates a lot of nonsense, a lot of distractions. Also, family culture that encourages us to go after jobs and student loans and all that. Your family culture plays a big part in how you view your economics. So I encourage you to be very culturally conscious and to sort of look around and look at how everyone around you views money. And the pursuit of money and what they consider to be the ways to get money. Also, integration, I think, was absolutely terrible for us. I'm not saying integration in general is bad. Integration is a wonderful thing if it's done appropriately. Integration could be an amazing thing if it was done with some degree of economic fairness. Integration could be beautiful if it involved as much Black ownership as it did before the Civil Rights Movement. But unfortunately, integration was harmful for us. Because what they did was they stripped you of all your true economic power. They it's like a they it's like if you're an economic tree and you've got roots and your roots make you strong, it's like they ripped the tree from its roots and planted the tree in another neighborhood. If you rip a tree from its roots and you plant that tree in another neighborhood, that tree will never grow as well as the other trees. That tree can't even get nutrients out of the ground because you cut the roots out. It can only be fed, it can only survive if it survives, if somebody else is providing what that tree needs in order for it to live. So when they took away all your businesses and they encourage you to stop owning land and resources and they convince you to go chase jobs and student loans, what they did was they ripped out your roots and they put you in a situation where you were incredibly unstable. You're not a strong tree that can withstand the weather. You are a tree that literally was planted 2 inches into the ground, and when a strong wind blows by, that tree falls right over. Or when there's not enough resources available, that tree will die because that tree does not get fed. You only get fed if they decide to feed you, and that is a vulnerable, horrible place for you to be. That is a terrible place for you to be. That is so terrible because not only are you dependent on somebody else, but you're dependent on people that have proven time and time again that they don't give a damn about you. They care nothing about you. They don't care nothing about your kids. They don't care anything about your happiness. And so we got distracted a little bit. I think integration threw us off our game. I think integration killed the very best of us. It kept us from being what we're supposed to be. So there's nothing about integration that makes you better. There's nothing about going to school next to a white kid that makes your kid smarter. There's nothing about working next to white people that makes us more wonderful. I personally think that we have to sort of hit the reset button on all of that and what that means in terms of wealth. And actually, what I'm going to do in a second to conclude is I'm going to give you the three pillars of wealth. This is something we stand on in the Black Business School. This is the business we stand on, where we tell you if you want to be wealthy in America, these are the three areas that you should focus on. Now, before I do that, I want to respond to what some of you have been asking about. The stock market, the Stock Options Summit is this week. It's in LA. If you want to join us in the Stock Options Summit, you can go to stockoptionssummit.com. I'm going to be there for the 19th and the 20th. And so we're going to be at the Los Angeles Hilton, which is right next to the airport. And our events are really, really fun. It's a great opportunity for you to network and connect with incredibly smart people. And also, when you walk out of there, you will have a clear pathway to building more wealth. In fact, if you have a capital base, I can show you how to make money by Monday, literally. But it's just fun and a great opportunity for us to really get together and really enjoy each other's company, learn about stock options, and really create a culture around ourselves that is built around prosperity, success, happiness, and wealth. So feel free to go to stock OptionsSummit.com if that's something that you'd like to do. Now, if you can't make the summit and you want to just go through the Stock Options Masterclass, you can feel free to go to StockOptionsMasterclass.com. There's a whole masterclass there. You can do it at, at your own pace in the comfort of your own home. And so if you can't, I'd love for you to make it out to the summit. We only have about four or five seats left. So if you want to come, you might want to go and get your ticket now. Don't just show up at the door because there won't be any tickets at the door. If you want to come out, you can. But if you can't make it for whatever reason, then go to StockOptionsMasterclass.com. There's a really good masterclass there that I put together with really good material. I believe stock options is one of the things that all of our kids should understand, all of us should understand, because there's a lot of money buried over there. All right. So let me give you all some pillars of wealth. And here's one more thing I wanted to share with you, by the way. I know some of you are asking. This is the last time I'm going to share this list. The list of dividend stocks. Remember the dividend monsters? I'm going to give you guys this list one more time, and then after that we're done. Next time we're going to move to something else. So here's the list of the dividend paying stocks. Let me put that in the chat. I think I saw a question where someone said, am I ever coming to Omaha? I wish I could say the answer is yes, but actually it's probably no, only because doing live events costs a lot of money. And in fact, it costs so much money that we don't make a profit from live events. We just do them because we like to get together and meet you and stuff like that. But honestly, it's very difficult to do, especially when like we're not funded by corporations or funded by the government, like a lot of institutions. So we have to be really, really thoughtful about how we allocate our resources. So reaching you online is the most cost efficient way to do that. And then also with me having a family and everything, I can't just go city to city like I did maybe 10 years ago. So literally the two big events that I'm doing this year are the All Black National Convention, which is October 25th through the 27th. That's going to be in Chicago, right outside Chicago in Lombard, Illinois. You can go to allblacknationalconvention.com. That's allblacknationalconvention.com. Also, I agreed to appear at George Frazier's Power Networking event, which is July 10th. That's going to be in Charlotte. And then also Jay Ortiz out of Philadelphia is doing something called the Get Money Summit, and or what's the Get Money Fest? Get Money Fest, I think is what he's calling it. And it's mostly he's a hip hop artist out of Philadelphia. He was performing recently with Kevin Gates and stuff like that. And I wanted to come and talk to younger people because younger people need to understand this stuff. People around 30, 31, 32, and younger, they're just distracted, and I think that they are struggling economically because they're not getting the right messages. So with him, I talked to a lot of young artists, like hip hop artists, stuff like that, that are independent on how to actually make money, how to monetize your brand, stuff like that. So I am going to do the Get Money Fest, which is going to be in May. I think it's like May 10th or something like that. I'll give you guys the information if you live in Philly and you want to come out. I guess because I'm there, there might be people there that are over that age group, but it's really also they're going to have a concert and art and every all kinds of stuff. So anyway, all right. So let me share with you the three pillars of wealth so we can kind of bounce out. And then also I'm going to give you guys a link if you want to join us for the portfolio power play. So the three pillars of wealth, and if you've been with the Black Business School for a while, you probably heard me reference it at some point, but I want you to keep this in your mind. This is where the money's at. These are the people in the VIP section of the club. Remember, I was explaining the economy like a nightclub, and you got the people in the VIP section, you've got the customers that are having fun and partying, dancing, drinking, whatever they're doing. Then you've got the workers, the waitresses and the strippers and the bartenders who aren't having as much fun as the customers are. And then you got the people that are standing outside the club freezing. So the people standing outside the club freezing in 2-degree weather, those would be like the Gen Zs. Those are the ones who are sitting there saying, wait, everybody's talking about how great the club is, but I'm not having fun because I'm locked out of the club. Yeah, you're locked out of club economics because nobody helped you get in. Nobody helped you get a pass to get into the club. So you're locked out. So you're freezing. You're not having as much fun. So they're not having as much fun with this economy. This is a booming economy, but a lot of Gen Zers are struggling in this booming economy. And the people that are working inside the club, they're in the atmosphere, but they're not really having that much fun because they're still workers. That would be like workers in the American economy. So you hear on TV, everybody saying the economy is booming, but it's not booming for workers. In fact, all the immigration they say is growing the economy, but it's also keeping wages low. So that means if you're a worker and you don't own anything, you're not benefiting from this increased labor supply. The people that benefit from the increased labor supply are the people that own stock. Why? Well, because when wages are low, profits go up because productivity has gone up and the cost of labor has remained the same. So the stockholders are making big, record size profits. So their stock prices are going up. Real estate prices are going up. So here are the three pillars of wealth. Let's lay this out so you guys can have this. Write this down. Number one, stock market investing. Stock market investing is the number one leading factor for people that want to build wealth. In fact, in America, it's very difficult to build wealth if you're not participating in the stock market. Those that have the most wealth in America tend to own the most stock. So stock market investing, that's the rocket ship. That's the most important part. So if you have a family that is anti-stock market investing, I'd be willing to bet you that your family does not have a lot of wealth. Okay, and I'm not making fun of it. It's just a reality. Next, real estate investing. Owning property is very powerful because when inflation occurs and everyone thinks inflation is bad, inflation isn't bad for everybody. Inflation doesn't hurt everybody. Inflation hurts people that have to buy stuff, but it doesn't hurt people that own stuff. People that own stuff, they benefit from inflation. Producers benefit from inflation because they can charge higher prices. People that own assets benefit from inflation because they have something they call asset inflation. Asset inflation is where, when during inflationary periods, stock prices go up, real estate prices go up. So if I own a house that's worth $300,000 and inflation goes through the roof, well, now my house is worth $450,000. I'm not really complaining about that. I'm not worried so much about the fact that a can of Beanie Weenies, went from $2 to $2.70. That doesn't affect me because I just made $150,000 on the house that I own. So real estate investing passed generation to generation is an important hedge against inflation. It's also something that is another indicator of wealth. The third is entrepreneurship. If you ever want to make like real money, like big, big money, you got to at some point start some sort of a business or be an owner in some sort of new business venture. This is where I've seen students in the Black Business School literally go from making $6,000 a month to $100,000 a month, literally by finding one product and sometimes that people want and developing a business model around their product. In fact, in the Black Business School, we have a whole franchising program. Franchising is great because franchising allows you to buy into a business without having to even come up with a business model. So if you want to take a look at that, actually email the team. I don't have the link with me, but if you email support@theblackbusinessschool.com, they can show you our franchising program. We did an attorney who was an expert in franchising who spent a whole year teaching franchise stuff, and we saved everything. It's all in there. It's really good stuff. And a franchise is a great family business to create because you just get all the manuals, they explain to you what to do, and then boom, you're in business together. And it's a great learning experience. I think the best way to go to business school is to actually do business. If you do business and you're learning along the way, that's more effective than going to college and reading a bunch of books. So those are the three ways that people build wealth. Is it too late to buy a house? No, it's never too late. Remember that There were people who didn't buy houses in the 1980s because they felt that housing prices were just too high. They said, "Oh my God, a house in Los Angeles costs $85,000. That's way too much. I'm not gonna buy any real estate. I'm gonna wait for the price to go down." How crazy is that? How silly is that? Literally, it's the 1980s, and LA home prices are $85,000, and you say, "I'm not gonna buy a house. It's too late to buy a house because the housing prices are too high." No, because they're gonna keep on going up. Right. So just remember that. And whatever the prices are now, chances are they're going to continue to go up. So, yeah, the best time to make a move when it comes to real estate or anything is actually right now. Okay. All right. So, anyway, I'm going to go ahead and bounce out. Let me give you guys the link if you want to join for the Portfolio Power Play. I'm going to do that right afterward. And then I'm going to have to end that a little bit early just because I got to go to, we're doing some estate planning stuff today. I'm excited about that. Let me see if I can find the link here, and I can share that with you guys, and you can join me. And then also, there's a, if anybody wants Dr. Claude Anderson's books, we created a little bundle in the book in the Dr. Boyce Books Financial Literacy Store that includes his book and my book. So and also the flashcards for my book and stuff like that. I'll share that link with you too before we get on out of here. And also tomorrow, we're gonna meet again tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. And so if you want to get an invitation to Money in the Morning Financial Consciousness Training, just text the word morning to 87948. If you text morning to 87948, I will send you an invitation. And then last but not least, let me share with you the whole Powernomics pack with Dr. Claude Anderson. So feel free to take a look at that. I think everybody and their kids should read Powernomics. And if you don't want to read it, just come to the just come to class. Like I'll read it to you. I've been reading it out loud for 5, 6 years now. Let's see. I spoke to a person who wants to speak with you about youth vocational trades programs. Okay, well, if you have someone that wants to reach out, email support at theblackbusinessschool.com, and they can arrange something. I don't do a lot of meetings just because my schedule's so super tight. But you know, and we were actually going to do a trades program, and we spent a whole year preparing this freaking thing, and then for whatever reason, it just kind of fell apart. And honestly, it makes me a little bit skeptical. Like when people, I have so many people that come to me and say, "Oh, I want to do this. I have this great idea," and it's great. But the problem though is like sometimes people will just waste your time. You know, like sometimes people will just waste your time. And the thing is, time is short. You know, I count every second of my life, and I know the things that are working and the things that are not. And I don't have time for BS. That's it. That's probably why I'm very impatient with politics and all that. There was that one politician wanted to come on my platform, or Robert F. Kennedy, and I just told him no because I said I thought about it and I said, do I really want to sit here and listen to this guy's scruffy voice for 2 hours and have him just tell me a bunch of stuff that I truly don't believe is going to make a difference for Black people? And I just said no. And I'm not saying it's that I'm right. I could be wrong, but I just hate wasting time, you know. So like sometimes someone will come to you and you'll buy into the idea and you'll put all this energy and time into it. I mean, I have my whole team working on this project for 1.5 years. And then at the last minute, they're like, "Oh, we decided we don't want to do it." So that taught us a lesson about how you invest. When you invest in things, you have to invest in a way where everybody has skin in the game, you know? And so, truth be told, I'm more likely to consider investments where the other party can show me what they're putting in. And also the way our time will be protected in the event that you decide to bail out. So I'm gonna be honest with you. I was a little bit salty about you know, the whole conversation about the skilled trades thing because I thought we had a deal. I thought we were gonna move forward, and it just it's silly. So just know that sometimes you'll be meeting with a skeptic, and in fact, you probably wouldn't be meeting with me. I have team members that do that because the stuff that I know works. It's like stuff that we're doing right now. Like me talking to you right now, I know this works, and that's why I make this a priority, right? So that's the goal, right? You have to be efficient. You have to really question everything. And to me, consciousness is awareness, and awareness means I know the difference between what works and what doesn't work. So let's keep focusing on the things that work. Focus on your family. Do right by you. Do right by you and your kids. You know, do the little things like the $5 a day plan, which you can find at blackwealthmasterplan.com. Blackwealthmasterplan.com is the $5 a day plan. And that is going to get you here. That's what's going to get you ahead in this economy. Be careful with the distractions. Okay. All right. So let me go. I'll see you guys in a few minutes with the portfolio power play. Have a good day, everybody. I'll see you in the morning. Bye-bye.